Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
What a difference a week makes. At this time, 7 days ago, Marty, you were enjoying solitude, freedom from me, time on the golf course at Danny Gare's event, and the world thought of Canada as an innocent place. Now, a bunch of cheaters. And that leads us into the start of our show. I got sour on the Olympics in 1988 when Ben Johnson scandal went down, and Canada hasn't learned a thing since.
Well, Ben Johnson was set up. He was doping along with everybody else on that starting grid, including Carl Lewis. He's the only one that hasn't got caught.
Allegedly.
He hasn't got caught. But Ben Johnson was set up, and there's a great 30 for 30 on that. On ESPN, you go watch it. It's really entertaining, especially if you were of that generation that watched the 80s for that, you know, fastest man. And then there was the Donovan Bailey, Michael Johnson, a few years later, there was the 150 meter race at the Sky Dome, the whole thing. Right. But anyway, the whole Canada thing, I like to think, well, I always joked around, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, because that's what goalies we did. We found little ways to add a little piece of equipment here, a little piece of equipment there. Mm-hmm. Knee blocks, bigger jersey, right? Mm-hmm. And then here with obviously the NFL and the Bills and the Patriots scandal and cheating and filming and all of that, you're like, cheaters, cheaters. We don't stand for cheaters. And Tom Brady with the deflated balls. But I still think
don't forget about the Astros.
Yeah, well, the Astros too, banging the drum, the whole thing, right? And then the whole drone flying Canada soccer thing with the women's team is
accompanied by a Rick Westhead TSN story that has sources saying it's been going on both Canadian programs, men's and women's, for years.
Yes, and then Canada won the gold at the 2021 Olympics, which were the 2020 Olympics. It didn't happen that summer. They moved to 2021. And I forget her name, but the Canadian goaltender who was fantastic in penalty kills, right? Like in penalty kicks, I should say, not penalty kills. That's another thing. She posted something basically saying, nobody ever told me what the other teams were going to do in penalty kicks. I studied, I watched tapes, I looked at the players. So, no drones or anything would have helped me, whatever, which maybe that's good for her. But as a coach, you're helping others doing so, whatever. I mean, why do they have close practice anyway? I remember we were with the Sabres Duffer. Yeah, exactly. So this is where I'm going to go. We're with the Sabres. We go to LA. We're in the LA Kings and LA Lakers, basically practice facility, practice area. Yeah. So we skate on the ice, whatever. And then we found out that the Lakers were practicing on the court, right? An off day or whatever. All the windows are taped black. Like you can't see, you can't go in. I'm like, what's going on? Like, why is everybody so secretive about their practices? Why is soccer so secretive about their practices? You want to watch a hockey practice? If you're another team, you can sit there and watch it.
Yeah, but Lou wouldn't allow it.
Lou was weird like that. But I'm just saying, like, why? Like, what are you, trying to hide? Or there's no secrets.
You tell me. You're the one who's been inside the room.
Hey?
I said, you tell us. You're the one that's lived the experience. What's to gain? What's to hide? How big is the cheating scandal? When is a Stanley Cup champion going to get caught for cheating other than circumventing the cap, which everybody loves to get wrangled?
It's not going to happen. So I get it if you're like baseball, knowing the pitches, right? That's huge for a batter. You know if it's going to be
they've been stealing signs in baseball since the 20s and
years. There's just a way of of being able to relay that message other than banging on a garbage can so that, you know, you're like, hey, that pitcher has a tell. When he holds his glove that way, it's going to be a fastball. When he's like holding it that's all part of the game. In hockey, the game goes so fast. Even if you were like hiding your practices, because you said we have Tage Thompson on the power play or Alex Ovechkin on the power play or Steven Stamkos on the power play. And instead of being on the right side of or the left side of the formation on the one timer, we're going to move him to the other side or whatever. It happens so fast. You adjust on the fly. There's no times in hockey that I thought, oh, coaches said, watch for this in the play. Like before a face-off, maybe, you're like, okay, watch for that play. As they're coming up the ice and a set breakout, maybe you watch for something. But when the play is happening in hockey, it's so fast that you don't really have time to think about a special play other than what is happening in front of you. In football, I can understand formations, moving players around. Like you want to, the plays are different. But hockey happens
most other sports. Yeah, I mean most, and especially soccer, because it's, you know, not a lot of offense. So if there's
set pieces, if you know what they're gonna do on a corner kick, on a free kick, it helps you obviously. But it's still a matter of execution. I still go back to like Marv Levy, what he said when he coached here in Buffalo. I'm only gonna have, you know, a handful of offensive plays. It's about us executing them the way that we need to. And if we execute well on offense, we're gonna get it done. It doesn't matter if they know the play's coming. About execution and making it happen.
Well, what do you think the fallout should be for Canada in the process here, despite, you know, eliminating their coaching staff pretty much? Let's hypothetically say they go on to win gold again.
Well, I thought about that yesterday.
It would feel kind of tainted, wouldn't it?
I've thought about that yesterday as if I was part of an organization. I'm just going to use like the Buffalo Sabres, right? I'm part of the Buffalo Sabres organization, and I have knowledge that they are cheating, like about something that they shouldn't. Like maybe they're hiding some revenues, or maybe they're like, what do you do if you have that knowledge, right? If you're with Canada Soccer and you had knowledge of that happening, you can't continue with Canada Soccer. Like anybody that had knowledge that did not say anything. And if, unless you went up to your superior and said, hey, this is going on, and the superior didn't do anything about it or told you, I'll handle it, and then moved on. Like there's got to be more impact throughout the whole system. And again, it comes down to there's already been some major, major issues with Canada soccer, like in Canada, whatever. So now you're dealing with even more of that.
Yeah. Now, how does it tie into today?
Well, Carolina definitely, that's our team of the day, by the way. They definitely cheated in 2006 when we went there and they had a remote control on the puck as Brian Campbell went around the net and shot it in the crowd. Like that, it shouldn't have gone out to play. It should have hit the glass, but they shortened their glass and they lightened the puck. So that's why it went out of play. They cheated. So Carolina's cheaters.
More on that story later. Shayna Goldman's also going to join us. You know, the big news yesterday that I'm sure we'll touch on more with Shayna.
Yes.
Is the contract of Travis Konecny.
Yes.
What was your immediate reaction?
My immediate reaction is, this is one that I always have been really high on. Like Travis Konecny has been on my list of players that I'm like, I like him. I love the way that he plays. I would want him on my team. And now that, obviously, his contract, it's not starting this year. It's the next year after, because he has 1 year left on his contract. It's an extension a year from now. But it tells me that Briere and the Flyers are going to be aggressive. Like this year, they almost made the playoffs. They weren't there yet. They had some goalie issues. They, you know, they still have gotten some really good players, and Konecny is one of them. And now they add Matvey Michkov to the fold. So $8.75 million a year on an 8-year extension. I think this is a really, really good contract for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Hmm.
You don't like it?
You know how much I love the player. He was top of the list as far as who I wanted Buffalo to acquire among all those players who had 1 year remaining, right? Like that was my focal point, was like, hey, try to grab a guy with 1 year left, let him play it out. Hopefully he has a massive year. If he chooses to stay, great. If not, you got the best out of him before free agency, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying and thinking at first blush. Now, I know Shayna's going to probably help us put it into, you know, some pretty good perspective later. It's a lot more than Tage Thompson.
Yes. Well, when you compare it to other contracts in the league, like a contract like Tage and whatever, but I just feel like that's now We're 2 years later after Tate signed his contract, and the rates are going up. The cap is going up. Clearly. The rates are going up.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's even almost like if I told you
Travis it's more than Sam Reinhart.
Yeah, it's more than Sam. But Sam, different situation. Obviously, we all know that. But being in Florida, Sam's going to make more money in his pocket than Travis Konecny. But Sam also scored 50 plus goals this year. Konecny was a 33 goals 30, this year,
yeah.
I think. So
yeah, the last 2 years, Konecny is top 20 in the NHL in goals per game. But that's basically it. Like, it's the last 2 years that have been, you know, great for him. It walked him into this contract situation. He was a good player. Now he's bordering on being one of the top goal scorers in the game. And based on what you said, given the strides that Philadelphia took last year, pretty good chance he just continues to add, you know, I see no reason why Konecny can't become a 40 goal scorer. It's just interesting to me that that number comes in so much higher than someone like Tage already. That's all.
So it's funny because you use Tage as an example, right? Tage is at 7.1 or whatnot, and Konecny is at 8.75. But okay, let's look at it and say Konecny is at 8.75 and Dylan Cousins is at 7 million. Mm-hmm. Now I'm like, okay, yeah, Konecny should be a million more probably than Dylan Cousins, at least in my opinion. Like, especially when you look at the numbers last season, the numbers the last 2 years, Dylan signed.
Well, they were both 30 goal scorers the year before.
2 years ago, yes. So
Travis has one more 30 goal season.
Yes, although Konecny was 24 goals, like 3 years in a row. He went 24, 24, 24. And I believe, if you ask me, what is Travis Konecny? I think he's at 35 goals, 45 to 50 assists, 85 points, right?
But which also, he hasn't done yet.
I think that's where this contract should elevate him to. Mm-hmm. That's one. Two, he gives you a physical edge, intensity, a kind of game that I would be looking for. Like, if I am a team and I'm drafting a player and I'm hoping that player turns into something unique, something special that we are going to have, mm-hmm. Travis Konecny is that guy. Is 8.75 right now a bit of a sticker shock? Yes, but I do believe that Travis Konecny next year, which he's, you know, not making that, you take next year and the 8 years and you make an average, it's going to lower his AAV, obviously, and all of a sudden he's getting you way more than that value.
Yes, as he has the last 2 years at 5.5. So yeah. It turned out to be, as many expected at the time, a really good contract for the player who was growing into the scoring role. And ultimately, it turned out to be a really good one for the team because they're still getting one more year at 5.5 out of a two-time 30-goal scorer. That's it for me, Marty. It's 13 minutes after the hour, and I am tapped out on hockey stuff today.
Well, there wasn't a lot going on this week. We hit the Sabres stuff with Beck Malenstein and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Still want to talk to Shayna when we talked to her at the bottom of the hour about Luukkonen, and, you know, because I really, the more and more I think about it, I'm like, is this a good deal, a great deal, or a home run? These are the three choices when I look at it. And I've been critical of Luukkonen in the sense that mostly before last year, I was always, I don't know if he is a full-time NHL guy just yet. Maybe he works to that part, right? Mm-hmm. And I think he proved last year in a very, very difficult environment and situation, because I don't think that the guys in front of Luukkonen helped him a whole lot. Number one, they didn't have the goal support. And two, they give up a lot of scoring chances and a lot of high danger chances, you know, against Luukkonen. And he was really good in those situations. So yeah, I think he showed a lot last year. So now all of a sudden I'm like, is it a good, a great, or a home run contract? That's where I'm still standing at right now.
Mm-hmm. Team of the day, obviously, is Carolina, as you alluded to off the top. So we could jump into that right now based on the fact that it has been an eventful offseason for them organizationally and obviously player-wise, because they do not resemble to a T the team that ultimately came up short in their playoff run. And they still have two significant signings remaining.
Yes.
Marty Natchez and Seth Jarvis. Now, they've added a couple of former Sabres, Tyson Jost, Eric Robinson. They added Will Carrier on a six-year deal. They lost some role players. They obviously were unable to retain Jake Guentzel, despite that moment in time when it looked like he was going to stay. And then all of a sudden, poof, it disappeared. Mike, I'm going to start with a different question, though.
Okay.
If the Hurricanes make the playoffs again next year, who's their night one starter in goal?
It's going to be Kochetkov. Look, it's Anderson and Kochetkov in net right now, but I do feel, unfortunately, I really like Freddie Anderson as a goaltender. The way that he plays, he's big, doesn't waste energy. He's not as athletic as Shesterkin and Vasilevsky and Saros and those guys, Sorokin, right? Even the Lukanen, very athletic in the way that he plays. Anderson's not like that. Anderson's more like a Connor Hellebuck in the way that he plays, very structured, a little bit more stiff. But I like that if you're efficient in the way that you play. With Freddie has shown efficiency in the way that he plays. Mm-hmm. The injuries and I don't know Freddie Anderson all that well. You talk about, you know, with a lot of people around the league and people that have been with him, and they question if the motivation sometimes is there and the heart is there, right? Fighting through some ailments and really getting, you know, to play full 82-game season. Goalies don't play all 82, but still getting to play 50, 55, 60 games because you're needed to do so. He didn't do it in Toronto, didn't do it in Carolina. So now they move on to, hey, there's a young guy that they really
have they moved on, though?
Could take, well, they haven't moved on, but I'm just saying now you say switch your gears, right? You have Anderson and you have Kochetkov. You've tried the Anderson thing and you're like, okay, we probably are going to switch our focus to Kochetkov now and say, can he do it, right? Can we give him the reins at the start of the season and make that happen? Mm-hmm. And I think that that would be the plan for the Carolina Hurricanes starting this year, is to move away from Anderson and really put it all on Kochetkov's plate. So that's who it would be, my starter.
And are you a believer in Kochetkov?
I was a big-time believer when he came up through the NHL, and then it dipped a little bit. I still think that there's not enough of a sample for me to really be a believer, but give me the first 2 months. Give me October and November this year on a really different looking team because of all the subtractions. Yeah, the additions are what they are, but the subtractions that Carolina has had to deal with this year.
You want to try that one more time?
Can do it, eh?
You want to try that one more time?
Subtractions?
No, take the S out.
Subtraction?
Subtractions. I know you can do it because Palmaster 43 is all about traction. So.
Yeah, I am all about traction, but listen, I'm also about all the Latvians in the league, and it's like they don't just add S's at the end of the names. They add them in between.
Just throw them in anywhere.
Throw them anywhere. So subtractions. I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, you know what? Let's see how Kochetkov does. But you talk about these. I talk about these subtraction. There's significant names. Duffer, Carolina last year. Carolina was good last year. They were second in the Metro only because the Rangers won the President's Trophy. They were third overall. They had 111 points. You know, you look at the balance that they had. Sebastian Aho, 36 goals. He also had 89 points. It's not 110. It's not 115 points. But they had balance in everybody that was on the roster. But they lose Brady Shea, Nason, Pesci, Teravainen, Guentzel, D'Angelo, Kuznetsov, Kuznetsov came in late, but it's still a name, a recognized name that you lose. They lost a lot, and they lost a lot of those players that played minutes on the power play, a lot of those players that played minutes on the penalty kill. They've lost a big part of what I thought was their identity last year.
If I do this, am I going to get the balloons off air? On air too. You know why I did that? Sebastian Aho, 27 today.
Yes.
How nice of it to fall on Hurricanes Day.
It was not prepared. So let's just say this. It was a full coincidence.
Okay, but if he was making a prepared statement on behalf of the organization on the heels of renewing the contract of Marty Natchez, is he going to stand there and say, we're thrilled to have Marty back? Or are they all just going to be like, eh, business is business. He'll do his thing, we'll do ours. How do we feel about the whole Marty Natchez ongoing, you know, situation with Carolina?
Look, as a professional, you have to know sometimes players are not fully happy. And that's from the outside, right? There's also an inside the locker room. I played with some guys that, you know, they were complete jerks in the locker room. And you're like, can we get this guy out of here? For no other reason than he doesn't fit and he's not good with everybody else. I don't know Marty Natchez. I think Marty Natchez's situation is more that he wants to be on the top power play. He wants to play top two lines. He wants to be given those opportunities. It probably has nothing to do with the person that he is and how he fits in with the rest of his teammates. Mm-hmm. It's more like, can I get that opportunity? He will get that opportunity in Carolina this year. They don't have Gensel. They don't have, well, Kuznetsov wasn't really that. Teräväinen was playing power play as well. Like, they don't have a lot of players, and all of a sudden, Natchez will probably elevate to that role. So that's why, you know, I think Carolina's going to, well, they're going to, Natchez is going to arbitration. If they don't settle before, they're going to pay him $7 million or whatever for 1 year just to have him there. I think that's what he's going to get.
What is he? Is he the near 30 goal scorer from a couple of years ago? Or is he the closer to 50 points-ish like this past season where he finished with 53?
I think he's more the 30 goal scorer that he was close to being 2 years ago. Again, okay, like if he's 25, 50, right? 75 points.
I don't want to be paying him $7 million. Not with the issue. I said if he's that, you don't want to be paying him $7 million.
25 goals, 50 assists, 75 points.
I thought you were saying 25, 25, 50.
No. If he's 25, 50, 75, right? Like, I'm just saying, like, that's where he was 71 points 2 years ago.
Right.
And if you give him that opportunity last year,
but he only Marty, you say that he was on the team and he was coming off of a big year. I don't know.
He had 26
I would feel like opportunity was there. And because it wasn't met, they went out and got Gensel because they were reminded all the time, this club needs to get another scorer.
Yeah.
So I always worry when you then kind of default or maybe move, like pivot slightly backwards to renew interest in someone you already had. You know what I mean, right?
I know what you're saying. I think we could say the same with Dylan Cousins here in Buffalo this year.
Younger, though, and different.
Younger,
Carolina's been in the playoffs for so long, right? Like, it's, I think the dynamic is totally different, right? Yeah, that's all.
When you look at the numbers, you could say, hey, look, is Dylan more what he was 2 years ago and progressing in that direction, or was he more what he was last year? I think Cousins is more what he was 2 years ago and progressing in that direction. I think
especially with a better team, which they hope they have now.
And Natchez, right? I think, is more what he was 2 years ago and progressing that way. I think 70 to 75 points would be good for Natchez. And now you're thinking, well, okay, arbitration may get him between $6.5 and $7 million. Mm-hmm. And you're going to use a $7 million player if you have him, and you're going to put him on the power play. You're going to put him on the top two lines because it kind of warrants that, especially with what you lost this year.
Yeah.
You know, they have about $13 million on the cap right now, about 14.
But it's all going to be gone.
It's seven. And it's seven for Natchez or close to, and seven for, maybe more than seven for Jarvis, like seven and a half.
All of our discussions previously for Jarvis, and especially now, I get it, younger than Konechny, so you can't just go there to that number, but we speculated a lot about just how high this Jarvis deal could go, and inflation across the league with a rising cap has shown that some of these contracts, you know, now granted, the Byfield one was a disservice to Jarvis, you know, in what he ultimately took dollar wise and term. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's $7.5 million. So, but if you see those guys coming in at that, do you see another move from Carolina still then to try to balance
I just can't see it. I look at their roster And look, I look at their lines. I think they're going to run with Svechnikov, Aho, and Jarvis on the top line. That's what it was last year. That's what it would be this year. And they have Kotkaniemi. That's going to have to play second line center with Natchez on the wing. And then who's the left winger on that line? You know, maybe it's Roslovic. Maybe it's maybe Will Carrier plays second. I don't know. Like, that's what Carolina is right now. It's we believe in, you know, our defense with, you know, Slavin.
Well, and yes and no. Careful how you phrase it.
They lost
it there.
Shea and Pesci this year. That's huge.
And could well lose, in one case, presumably to retirement, but you can never be too sure. But Brent Burns is 39, yes, and he's entering his last year. And Dmitry Orlov, who only took the two-year deal, is going into the final year of his deal. So they have another opening coming up here of almost $14 million on the blue line next season. But they've already extended Slavin, and that's going to be a team-friendly deal at 6.4 moving forward. They brought in Sean Walker. They brought in Gostisbehere, and they extended Chatfield. But if you're looking at like a two-year sample of what the Canes were in the end of last year's playoffs to what they might be 2 years from now on their blue line, holy cow.
Like, it's not the same.
That is nowhere close to being the same. So
no, and last year they were fourth in the league in goals against per game because they had a good defense and their goaltending, not that their goalies were great, but they had a solid defense and their structure was great. Their penalty kill was first because they had a solid defense and their structure was great. That's going to change as well. I see Carolina taking a step back this year when I look at all of it.
Well, in multiple years now, consecutively, the Canes have been the best in the NHL when it comes to shot differential. And, you know, that was why it was very interesting at one point last year when their goaltender's save percentage wasn't what you necessarily saw from some of the other best teams in the league. But part of it was they don't give up much. And as Marty Brodeur found out a time or two, like, it was hard to compete with Hasek.
They get 930 when you're giving up 24 shots a game.
Exactly. It's not the easiest sometimes. And of course, it almost exposes you to more criticism based on how dominant the games can appear from a possession standpoint. So, incredibly interesting team. We'll see what unfolds there. Obviously, Don Waddell moved on to Columbus, and that was a significant move, you know, from a management position. Waddell, according to not only Elliot Friedman, but Aaron Portsline, the longtime reporter in Columbus, has said that Patrick Laine has been cleared to return from the NHL and NHLPA Player Assistance Program. So that'll be an interesting talking point for us after the break with Shayna Goldman, because obviously we've been wondering when, if Laine returns and whether it will in fact be for some games with Columbus, or does he get moved on somewhere else to his liking, a better position for both he and the team. So that's
he's taking it seriously this summer too. I seen some training video of him doing some wide receiver drill, some football training and all of that. Like, it's a completely different summer than what we've seen in the past.
Well, that's great to hear. And we certainly encourage you to continue, you know, following along in this hockey off season, but ramping up for next year. And that includes tomorrow. We have the open house down at KeyBank Center. You can check out available full, half, quarter season seat locations and learn, of course, about member benefits, exclusive perks. And in this particular instance tomorrow, check out unique merchandise and game-used equipment for purchase while supplies last. Sabres.com/openhouse. Shayna Goldman next on a Friday edition of Sabres Live.
With more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Our next guest only guests when I'm on the show. So she came on early last week, Wednesday, because that was my last day of the week. And now it's the True Friday episode with Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. How are you, Shayna?
I'm great. We have like a gorgeous 80-something degree day. Like, it is. We have all the summer vibes today. It's perfect to set up for the Summer Olympics.
Yes, Marty's Olympic Minute got turned into a rather lengthy segment to kick off the show today. We may circle back to it for your strong
opinion. We will, because I watched some rugby last night, so just got to
talk about that. I was watching it yesterday morning.
Now he's an expert. That's anything Marty watches. It's amazing, the commentary that follows. But we did have news right before the bottom of the hour, and that was in regards to Patrick Laine. So what do we see in, you know, the immediate days and weeks ahead here, in your kind of instinct on this situation, as far as maybe a resolution for all, if we're talking about it from a Line A with Columbus standpoint?
I feel like the resolution is him going somewhere else. I think that's what everybody needs, a fresh start. And I think that'll be really good for him. It's not to say that he can't thrive in Columbus, because even if you go, you look on the surface and you look at the scoring and go, well, it's not to the level you expect of him in Columbus. Below the surface, it was some of his best seasons of his career. Not this past season, because he was injured for most of it. But if you go back a year, you look at it, the play driving was there. The transition play was there. Even the passing was a little bit better. So I think that there could be potential for him there. But best case scenario, fresh start somewhere else. And while you look at someone like Natchez, I think half the league could be interested, right? Because of the cap and what he brings to a lineup. Line 8's a little bit different because he has more noticeable and well-documented flaws defensively, especially. So it's not going to be as cut and dry. I think that there are a lot of teams that should show a lot of interest in him, because at the heights of his game, there's a lot of potential there. And I don't know if he's ever fully channeled all of it since those first couple of years in Winnipeg.
What is he? Is he a 30-plus, 35-plus, 40-plus? Like, even last year, 6 goals in 18 games, and that's where going through a lot going on, you know, physically, mentally, everything, right? So that's still, like, a 25-plus goal pace. Like, what is Patrick Laine realistically in the NHL?
I think in a perfect world, perfect situation, he has a really good two-way center, and he has a really good playmaking winger. I feel like he needs those elements to balance out his game, right? He's not going to be your ultimate star that can do everything by himself, and that's okay. I think if you maximize that and get him on a good power play one, that he could get 40 goals. And it's interesting, too, because when you look at the start of his career, when he was hitting those numbers, scoring wasn't as high as it is in today's game. And now we know scoring on the rise and uptick in power play production from, you know, everybody as a whole over the last couple of seasons. Put that all together, if he's in the right situation, I could see him easily getting to that 40-goal mark, because even when he wasn't scoring, go back to 22, 23, he was shooting the puck a ton. He was generating a lot of scoring chances. He had a good number of shot assists. He was entering the zone with control. He was even making key puck retrievals. So I feel like that there's that foundation to hit that 40-goal mark pretty handedly if he's healthy and maximized the right way.
And if people missed it at the bottom of the hour, Elliot Friedman tweeted that there's good news on Laine. He's cleared to return from the player assistance program, and that he is still recovering from shoulder surgery. As for his NHL future, teams interested in acquiring him were told they are free to contact Laine. So that's the next step before he and the Jackets decide how to proceed. Now, it's July 26th, so we're 4 weeks into free agency. We've gone through the uneventful draft, meaning, once again, there weren't nearly enough deals. But because, now this is not unexpected. Obviously, teams were keeping a very close eye on this situation. But do you think because we are this far along and teams have allocated money elsewhere, like, how has the market changed for Laine, and who really should be interested here? And obviously, like, we're sitting here, you know, a lot of the people in Buffalo wondering, like, is there still one more domino to fall from a scoring standpoint? Like, how do you view all this?
Yeah, I think that some teams that maybe could have been involved, say the Bruins, probably aren't, right? After handing out contracts to guys like Lindholm and Zadorov, like, I don't think they're going to be in the mix for him. And I think that's okay, because I think that there still should be other suitors. The Sabres, the entire offseason, felt like a team that if they're going to make a move, it's going to be via trade, right? Because free agency, you look at different age ranges for players and whether that lines up. But they're not the only ones I think could still be interested. Carolina still makes a lot of sense to me, especially since Gensel left. If what they need is a great finisher, and here it is in Line A, on paper, I feel like that's the best potential fit. And you think of all their defensive strengths, and maybe that could work out. And who knows what it could mean for Natchez too. If they're trading him, could Line A replace him in a sense? Mm-hmm. But even teams like Utah, make a lot of sense for me. You look at last year, the version of Arizona that we saw, and you see a lot of distributors, right? Michelli is a great passer. Logan Cooley is a really good passer. Same with Clayton Keller. And then you look at their power play, too, and I feel like that there's an opening not just to boost their power play production, but literally to put Line A in his best, you know, position to succeed on the advantage. And that's something I think that's going to take, you know, some consideration as well. Does he fit on power play one? And do they have someone in the role that he would play at the dot already? Because if they do, is he going to be at his best? So they make sense. And even a team like the Rangers, very quiet offseason so far, haven't gotten that top line caliber winger that I think we all know they need to really round out their top six, someone to play with Mika Zibanejad. Could he be it? Or on the other hand, does he push Zibanejad into too much of a passing role that he doesn't make sense? You know, there's a couple considerations to make with that one, but I feel like they're still an option. And same with a team like Montreal and those rebuilding clubs or teams that are trying to take the next step in their rebuild that probably have the cap space. But any true contender, it's a little harder to see unless you're Carolina.
Yeah, so Carolina was our team of the day. So we discussed that prior and all this subtraction. I added an S in subtraction. I kept saying it subtraction earlier, which did not roll off really easily. But anyway, so we talked about that a little bit, not the lining, but the, you know, who's going to score goals for them and what they're going to do. You, when you talk about the Rangers for Line A, obviously, yeah, Line A has 2 years left at 8.7. So you're acquiring a contract, but you could maximize that. Do you think a Philip Hedel makes sense for the Rangers to say, hey, we got to shed some salary, and in the trade, we'd have to maybe trade something over there? Or is Hedel too much to give in a Line A trade?
I think Hedel would be too much to give because they didn't keep Wennberg as a 3C. If they did, I think that would give a different message. Like, hey, maybe they don't. They have too many questions about Hedel's future, which I think would be understandable considering, you know, his concussion history. To me, it would be probably Kako because he's the top six winger that hasn't stepped up in the way that they need him to, plus. And I would have to imagine that there's salary retention because you are selling low. At the end of the day on Line A, even healthy, you're selling low after the last season. So I feel like if the Blue Jackets really want to make this happen, just have a clean slate for this season, which kind of feels like is the vibe right now, and for good reason after everything that went down last year, I could see them not getting back the best return, especially now that it's later in the offseason than it was, you know, a month ago before everyone spent in free agency.
Mm-hmm. I could definitely see Montreal. I think that one is where I definitely, you piqued my interest with that. You don't think like the Rangers would have any, I don't know, does anybody have regrets? I don't know, people just do stuff, right? They brought in Riley Smith. Like, you could probably use that money more to try to fit in Line A if you were really serious about upping the scoring, right?
You would think. I mean, I still think Riley Smith is going to make sense there for their third line.
And they got a little discount on him, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, here's a defensively responsible forward. Maybe you make him kill penalties and take some of that workload off someone else, and obviously losing Barkley Gaudreau, they might feel like they need someone to be ready for the penalty kill at all times. Mm-hmm. But it's always interesting, like, how does a team view themselves? And last year, you might have looked at the Rangers and thought, I guess they're going to have to, you know, buy the deadline again if they're going to get that help on the wings. And then Alexi Lafreniere got that opportunity on the Panarin line, and look at how he took off. So maybe that happens for Kako, but, you know, definitely. It's like a wait and see approach. And we've seen how they've supplemented before midseason, but, you know, it's not ideal if you go into the year that way.
It's in year two that it becomes problematic for the Rangers because Shesterkin's going to get a new deal and you're still paying Line A, and Lafreniere's going to get a new deal. But anyway, we're not Rangers live or Sabres live. I want to ask you about Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen because we did mention it yesterday on the show. The new deal, 5 years at $4.75 million. I have three ways of looking at that deal. It's a good deal, it's a great deal, or it's a home run deal. I can't see anything below that. Like, I don't see it not being a good deal for the Sabres. Where do you see it fitting? Good, great, home run?
I'm going to say great. I like the deal. I think he earned it. He's been really good. You look at last season, and I think he was the difference. Second half of the year, he's one of the best goalies in the league, you know? So definitely earn that. It's a contract to me that if for whatever reason they don't want it anymore, I think it's movable, right? And I think it's a way to kind of take some pressure off Levi, which I think is important. Because when he came in, I felt like the pressure, the expectations, the hype, look at what he did off the bat. So I think this kind of says, hey, we're okay having a two-goalie crease, which is, look around the league. Unless you have that bona fide 1A star, unless you have that Chesterkin or Vasilevsky that you know without a doubt is going to kill it, you want to have a good second goalie. And not for nothing, even if you do have, say, Chesterkin, you still need a capable, you know, backup. And we've seen that around the league growing more importance. You want to go into the postseason. You might be playing four rounds. You have to be prepared for that. And these are, you know, their goaltenders right now are not goalies who are ready to play 80% of the season plus a postseason run. So I think that this could be a really good thing. And it's not like the Sabres are crushed for cap that they couldn't afford to spend on goaltending for now.
What do you like most about it, the cap hit or the term?
I like both because I, you know what, it's that mid-range deal. I feel like we get so bogged down by long-term or bridge deal, right? Because those are the most common solutions. But that midterm, I think, is pretty, it's pretty good for everybody, right? I think it's a low enough cost. The cap hit's my favorite. It's a reasonable cap hit for, I think, for someone who can be a 1A goaltender, who you're not positive they're going to be their perfect starter. That is good money to spend, I think. But I think the term's favorable too. It's not an overcommitment. It's not the only contract UPL is ever going to get. So I don't think it's a bad move on either side right now.
You finishing with soccer, Marty?
No, I was actually just going to finish with Travis Konechny. 8'7" Patrick Laine or 8.75 Travis Konechny. You measure, you know, production impact on a team like differently from player to player. Who is the better $8.75 million player in your opinion, Konechny or Laine?
That's a really tough one.
How about Sam Reinhart?
Listen, that's going to take the cake right there. The thing with Laine is the
it wasn't another option. It was only a this or that, straight up this or that.
My bad.
I'm gonna go Konechny. I love Laine's game. All right, but I think that one, we know the flaws. Two, there's definitely durability concerns, and I hate to put that on a player, but he hasn't played a complete season in a few years. When you look at Konechny, you look at the guys that he's outscoring at 5-on-5 in recent years, it's guys like Stamkos and Marner. He's such a good 5-on-5 player. He hasn't had a ton of support around him. Do I think it's a little bit of an overpayment? Yes. Do I think that he can, if the Flyers keep getting better around him, he's going to be worth it up until those later years? Yes. And honestly, I know they already have 4 long-term deals on the cap between him, Tippett, Couturier, and Sanheim. I think altogether, they're less than $29 million. So if your core down the line, the years that it might be bad, is less than $29 million, that's what some teams have in 2 players. So I don't have an issue with it. I think that he's a very good player that can show us more, honestly. I think that he's worked out really well there. I think that he unlocked more elements in his game last year to become a more complete player.
Hard to argue. He, in the last 2 seasons, has been over 30 goals both times and is top 20 in goals per game. That's it's pretty elite company when you look at the scorers who are right next to him on that very list. Shayna, enjoy this perfect summer day / weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy birthday to one of my favorite defensemen the last decade, Alec Martinez, now of the Blackhawks, is 37 today. There are 4 Canadians currently in the top 20 at the 3M Open on the PGA Tour. Are any of them cheating, Marty?
No, there's no cheating in golf. That doesn't happen. So only when you play with your buddies on Saturday morning,
right?
And you get a little foot wedge and a little move the ball here, a little mulligan there. And also, there's no cheating in the Canadian Open.
No, not the Canadian Open, the 3M Open. Did you want to close with another Olympic minute?
Yeah,
not to be confused with a Canadian Heritage Moment.
No, Canadian Heritage Moment, no. My Olympic minute is yesterday I got to watch a little rugby 7. And when I watch rugby, I don't know the rules. I like the scrums, right, when they drop the ball and then they have both teams just collide and then they push and then they turn. Well, there's none of that in rugby 7. It's like if you were an NFL fan and you took away the offensive line and defensive line and you just went 7-on-7. You basically had the quarterback, you know, wide receiver, tight ends, running back. back and you said, okay, we'll go without the offensive lines. And that's what we're doing. It was pretty entertaining. Like the guys hit hard, and the women's, I haven't watched the women's game yet in the Olympics. They hit hard as well. So I was fully entertained by France and Argentina in rugby sevens.
Talk to me in 28 when lacrosse returns to the Olympics. Until then, enjoy the weekend. We'll see you Monday.